Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome to the first edition, the opener, the season opener to the Final Inspection Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm your host, Steve Zocchi, along with my trusty sidekick, Jeff Orlowski. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, this is like our clash today. The season opener, we're finally got cars on the track at Daytona. We're on the track, so to speak, here in beautiful Hales Corners, Wisconsin, ready for action.
The greatest racing, auto racing show that generates from Hills Corners.
Absolutely.
I think so.
By far.
Yeah.
By far.
How was your short off season? Eventful, I guess.
Yeah, it was eventful. Chasing the kids around.
HIPAA laws, unfortunately, I can't divulge any more than that, but that's fine. But yeah, it is a short off season. It's the only one that really is comparable to that would be golf, I guess, right?
Yeah, golf kind of seems like the NBA and NHL.
Yet, I still have my Facebook friends that bitch about the off season and auto racing.
You know, it's really short when you look at it. When you're doing a show, you know, every Saturday during the season, it does get long. But then when you don't have it, you know, it's the same thing. I had a medical test. I had a fast for one day. I couldn't eat. Okay. That day, everything looked great. I had a taste for everything.
Sure.
You tell me I can't do something or I can't watch it, that's all I crave. So, you know, when it's gone, you want it back. When it's, you know, the dog days, late summer, and you're like, oh my God, we still got 15 more weeks to go. You know, it's a different story. But yeah, you miss it when it's gone.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's even shorter, though, when you talk about the Chili Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
It comes in January,
yep.
Which is entertaining. I mean, if you have the means to, if you're retired and you're a racing fan, it's almost mandatory that you buy that pay-per-view, because I think it's one of the best deals that's out there, where you're just, it's because now they race Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then all the big stuff happens on Saturday. So it is just a really, really neat deal. And then a couple weeks after that, you got the Rolex 24.
Yeah, it's great.
Unfortunately, this year didn't end it the way I really wanted, but I guess it didn't matter. The finish was pretty much, you know, most likely the race is going to finish, but they had to call it because of, yes, it was raining. Yes, it was, but it was actually the flooding on the infield that was the big issue.
But they only called it like 10 minutes early.
Well, yeah, but they've been off the track for a while.
So. Well, yeah, they red flagged it for
a couple
hours.
That was for TV.
But, yeah.
Got to play the commercials.
Of course.
So.
Got to get paid.
But looking forward to a really, really fun season upcoming. And a lot of things happening this year, especially one thing I'm really looking forward to is we got auto racing at the Milwaukee Mile again.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Father's Day.
Father's Day weekend. So, you know, this is one of these things where there's been a lot of buzz about it. And the good thing I've been hearing is there's a lot of people who may not be a particular super fan of what's coming in, and that's the ARCA Midwest Tour Super Late Model Series. And there's some other touring groups there. And there's a possibility of vintage IndyCars being there too.
Nice.
So Bob Sargent and the whole crew at Track Enterprises is working to kind of put together a package that there's something for everybody there. And it's kind of cool when you see Facebook comments and that I'm not that super big of a stock car fan, but you know, I want to show up and support the track, and only good things can happen because you know, there's a lot of people. Yeah, I was at a dinner in Chicago last weekend, and I got people coming up to me. Yeah, I heard that they were actually they're in the process of tearing down the grandstands, and all these rumors that feed, and people, you know, hear something, then they tell somebody, oh yeah, did you hear the tearing down the Milwaukee Mile? I mean, there's people that thought there was a Menards on there. No, that's Hill's Corner Speedway that happened to, and that was 15 years ago. But you know, it's. Is it in a good situation? No, I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say that. But I always look to what happened at Gateway. And I was talking to the general manager at Gateway last weekend, and that track was really close to being subletted and being torn down.
And I mean, now it is one of the premier events of the IndyCar season.
So, you know, if that, and they did it the right way. And how did they do it, Jeff? Small events first and started on that road back. So, you know, it's this is a first step to come back. You know, now I'm also involved with an organization that we do an event in July there, the Harry Miller Club Meet, which is the first weekend usually after the 4th of July. And so, I mean, there is stuff there. There's been drag racing, weekly drag racing that's been there during the week. And there's all sorts of things going on there. So, you know, plus the fair uses it and generates the most money out of it for parking during the fair. So, you know, and plus, as far as I know, they still owe money on the grandstands. There's still, you know, bonds that need to be paid and whatnot. So, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed and let's hope this thing continues on and we can build off of this this event. And I hope all the fans out there come and support Bob Sargent, Track Enterprises, and that ARCA weekend, because I think you might be surprised. It's not going to be just, you know, that, you know, 100 or 150, whatever lap race it's going to be, but there'll be other stuff there. And it's a good way to support and show the state that, you know, there is still a market for auto racing at the Milwaukee Mile. This is a chance for, you know, fans to actually do something, support it with your wallet.
Yeah.
And we're not talking $100 ticket either. I mean, these are going to be reasonably priced tickets. So,
well, they're going to have my money, and I'm going to take my three kids out there as well. I'm going to try to talk the boss into going. I don't know if she'll go or not, but they got at least four tickets sold between me and my three kids.
So looking forward to that, and there's a lot of other things coming, and it should be a fun year coming up on the Final Inspection Show and for auto racing in general in the state of Wisconsin and the Midwest, for that being, because we have a lot of listeners that also listen online throughout the Midwest, and we certainly appreciate them. But if you're interested, you know, in supporting this event or have ideas for it, you know, I would love to hear from you on Twitter or on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Facebook on the Final Inspection or TFI, the Final Inspection page on Facebook, and then also on Twitter, we're at SFI 1250. That's our old AM dial. That's our Twitter handle there. Or you can message me directly at Steve Zautke, Zautke, on Twitter. Or Jeff on?
I'm at Jeff _ Orloski, Orloski.
So we got a fun show coming up today, too. We're going to be, when we come back after this break, we'll be talking NASCAR, just kind of what's going on, what's occurred over the last 24 hours. And we actually have racing that's going to be on TV that you'll be able to watch this evening and this afternoon. So we'll talk about that, racing at Daytona. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking to Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. Looking forward to chatting with him about things in the world of NASCAR. And then at the top of the hour, we'll be talking to David Land. from YouTube. So looking forward to that. David Oz has some interesting things. Make sure you follow and subscribe to his YouTube page on YouTube. Entertaining stuff. He kind of puts everything in perspective. In the world of auto racing, that's why I kind of stumbled upon his page last year and noticed that our shows and what he talks about, what we talk about, there's a lot of synergy there. And we certainly appreciate him coming on, and we'll enjoy having him on this upcoming year. So should be a fun show. A lot of more surprises coming up on the Final Inspection Show after this.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
To the Final Inspection Show, of course, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. We make sure to get to greatlakesdragway.com and get your 2019 season passes. All this good stuff happening on the webpage at greatlakesdragway.com, and looking forward to them opening up as soon as they are able to. And well, this week, or coming up, the next race, I guess, coming up is the ARCA 200 at Daytona. Always a cool race. I've always kind of liked that race, especially in the past and back in the 70s and that. There was always a lot of Wisconsin ties.
Mm-hmm.
It was real common back in the olden days where a lot of USAC drivers. USAC had a stock car division that was very popular at Milwaukee and in the Midwest and was very strong. But you did have a lot of crossover, not only with some of the bigger teams in that, driving in the Daytona 500, you had teams like Norm Nelson Racing would go down. There were Jim Herterbys or Roger McCluskey or whatnot. And then maybe like a Don White would go down there, Ramel Stotten, those guys, Butch Hartman. You'd also have, you know, I don't want to say lesser drivers, but maybe at that time less experienced drivers. You'd have like guys like Paul Feldner, who was from Colgate. He ran down in the ARCA race. Dave Marcus, before he moved into NASCAR, ran some ARCA races and ran Daytona. And then you had, of course, your stalwarts at Daytona, such as, you know, Benny Parsons, Ramel Stott, who I mentioned before, Iggy Katona, who at the ungodly age of 57, it was shocking back in 74, 75, he drove an old KK Insurance Dodge to victory 1 year. And just an extraordinary driver. Had a very long career. But then you have guys like Jim Sauter, who drove an old Dave Deppe Dodge Charger to victory at Daytona. So a lot of Wisconsin ties to the ARCA race, and looking forward to that. Oh, and then Rick Tackman, a local driver. We had him on the show last year. He's down there with the number two car that made the field down there. So we're looking forward to seeing them down there and competing. So I always love the ARCA race. It's your for a lot of those guys and a lot of those drivers, today will be their first time on a super speedway, and it can make some harrowing incidents down there. But you know, it's one of those things you got to learn, and this is where a lot of the drivers cut their super speedway racing teeth, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because, you know, you can just sit there and while you're watching the race, you can tell what cars where the driver is puckered up real tight. And you see the way that they handle, you know, coming out of the corner into the straightaway and stuff like that. And, you know, you could just point and be like, oh, God, look at 47, man. That guy is nervous. And it's really exciting, you know. Like you said, a first chance for some of these guys to get on these super speedways. And yes, you know, you can tell sometimes, but the racing is exciting as well. You know, it's a good appetizer for what's to come, both later this weekend, you know, with the Clash, and then obviously next weekend when, you know, Xfinity and, you know, the trucks and the 500 and everything take center stage.
Yep. And some interesting storylines out of ARCA this weekend. Christian Eckes won the pole for Venturini Motorsports. That's not a surprise. They've been strong in ARCA for many years in their Toyotas. And qualifying second was Thad Moffitt, who is the grandson of Richard Petty.
Yeah.
And then Leilani Munter is also running for Venturini. This is going to be her last race before she retires. She's been running ARCA for many years. So it's some interesting drivers in the race, interesting storylines. It'll be interesting to see. Harrison Burton is racing, of course, son of, Brett or Ward or Jeff Burton, is he?
I believe it's Jeff.
It is. I just had a brain fart. I should know that. Natalie Decker, of course. Andy Seiss, who's one of these drivers from the Northeast. And just a real good driver, but just, you know, every time he was in position, they'd have an issue with the team folding or money, sponsor. Just one of these guys, he just could never really get his career going. Talented driver, but just, you know, just so frustrating. I always felt kind of bad for him because he is a talented driver. I'm glad he qualified in the top 10 for this race.
There's always a few drivers like that you could just watch, and for one reason or another, they're just snake bit, and he's got that going.
One of my favorite names, driver Ken Schrader Racing, young kid, Tyler Dipple.
Nice. It's a great name. Tyler Dipple. All right.
So,
I'm sure he didn't get bullied as a kid.
Todd Gilliland, of course, is in this race. And then you have your usual suspects, your Sean Corr, Bobby Gerhardt. Oh, and then Dave Mader III is racing. Dave Mader, he's been running. He ran ARCA in the 80s. And for many years, and it's good to see him in a car once again. We were kind of, me and my buddy were like, wow, Dave Mader. So, and Eric Caudill in the number two car is the car with Rick Tackman.
You know why there's no Polish people named, you know, why there will never be a Jeff Orlowski III? Because, you know, Polish people, we count 1, 2, 3. And then, you know, it's not the third, it's deterred. So it would be, you know, here's my son, Jeff Orlowski deterred. You know, that's why there will never be a Polish guy, the third. Just won't happen, ever.
Coming up in the next segment, of course, we got Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media. And a funny situation occurred of Jeff. Talk about what happened earlier today in practice. Not funny for the drivers involved, but I'll expand on that thought.
Well, he had a little run in. Chase Elliott was slow moving. He goes towards the middle of the track. He's trying to fall back. He ends up getting up into the top line, and there's Ryan Newman.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Ryan Newman.
No, it's Ricky Stenhouse.
No, now it's Ryan Newman. That's why.
It's that first race of the year where you go, oh, wow, I see Stenhouse. Wait a second.
Well, that's another reason why the Clash is beautiful, because it gets you used to the new numbers and the guys. You know, how long is it going to take us to get used to Truex in the 19?
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be.
Where's the 78 car? It's got to be out there somewhere.
Oh, God, it's going to take forever.
Yeah.
Forever. And, you know, Jamie McMurray, he was the one.
Right.
For the last 150 years. So, yeah, it's going to take a while. But yeah, Newman got into to Chase Elliott. They kind of collect Kevin Harvick as well. And Denny Hamlin, he got into the action and suffered serious damage. Hamlin and Chase Elliott, they both have to go to backup cars. Newman and Harvick will stick with their original cars. But these are Clash cars, not the 500 cars.
And somebody had a flat tire. I forget who now. They actually changed the tire in the backstretch. I love that.
Well, yeah, and both with Newman and Harvick's car, they got into the grass, and NASCAR allowed them to change their tires where they were so they didn't have to drive it off the grass and rip their car up.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're able to stick with their primary cars.
You know, and if NASCAR is serious about saving money and being, you know, that I like that. I mean, that's.
I do too.
If we're going to see a new kind of era in NASCAR officiating and kind of doing things for the good of instead of just doing it because we want it that way, that was good to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It makes sense. You know, it's a reason why it's shocking. It's a common sense solution to a very easy NASCAR problem, and they finally woke up and took the right steps to solve it. So kudos to them.
Yeah, very good. And, well, let's go over to Jayski and see what's going on there. Let's see. I'm waiting for you to jump in here and tell me that it's gone.
That Jayski's no mas?
Yeah. No mas Jayski.
Yeah, that's sad. That
it is.
Sad. You know, it's just a bad ending. And what a fantastic website that they were for so long. And we wish all those guys the best. And, you know, they did a phenomenal job. Just phenomenal.
Yeah, 22 years. And it was started in the early days of the internet. And they say timing is everything. And that was certainly kudos to them. And well, it was actually him at the time. Because it was that one-stop shopping kind of where you could get all of your information.
And the layout was so user-friendly. You go to some of these NASCAR sites, and just trying to find the results from today's race, 1 through 40, you know, it's awful. It is absolutely awful. And, you know, I'm no rocket scientist.
That's for sure.
Yeah, shocking, you know, breaking news here. But... you know, it's hard for me to figure out half of these sites. Jayski was always so easy. They had so much information there. It's going to be a big loss, a big loss. But, you know, such is the state at ESPN. You know, God, they've got rid of all their racing guys. Most of them have gone over to Fox now, which is good. But yeah, it's sad. It is sad.
Plans are being finalized for fan access to the NASCAR Cup Garage. This has been an ongoing issue. We even had this at the Milwaukee Mile back in the day where it's very tough. We had a situation, I think it was with you last year, wasn't it? With you, we're credentialed media people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I sent Jeff up there to get interviews.
Yeah, Road America. I was interviewing Natalie, I believe.
Decker.
Yeah, Natalie Decker, and my credential was good for the press box and the press area, but I did not get a garage pass. So where I was supposed to interview Natalie, and I had four other interviews all lined up, bang, 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 I couldn't get down there. And Natalie and her folks were phenomenal to work with, and while I was chasing guys down that worked for NASCAR to get me the right pass so I can get down there and do my job. I missed out on the four other interviews, but like I said, Natalie Decker and her crew were fantastic to work with, and I at least got an interview with her.
So in other words, when the people who are supposed to have garage passes can't even get garage passes, NASCAR has been very stingy with the tracks.
Yeah.
Because usually it's up to the tracks then to... you know, the tracks get a certain amount of garage passes, and those are delved out to the reporters and whatnot. And there's certain, there's when you're doing that and why it's good at the track level to do or the local level, because as somebody as Jim Tradel used to do that at the Milwaukee Mile, and we look at, you know, who should have what, you kind of know, well, because you're close to them, you've worked with them throughout the years. Well, you know, they're doing TV stand-ups and that up. We need that. And there's, you know, let's put on honest, you know, if there's a guy putting in for a credential for the first time, you know, if especially for a NASCAR race, there's a good chance he's not going to get that garage pass because you only have a very limited amount. So needless to say, for fans to get garage passes, it's almost really, really hard unless it is through the team.
Mm-hmm.
The teams would have something for sponsors and whatnot. So it's kind of interesting. Here, I'll just read Dustin Long's report here. Sunday marks the debut of a NASCAR policy that will open the Cup Garage at select times for fans. NASCAR plans to have a similar program at many tracks this season. This has been done in the Xfinity and truck garages. The Cup Garage will be open to fans from 9:30 to 11:30 at Daytona. Track officials plan to distribute vouchers for those camping in the trucks and blah, blah, blah. Then the truck garage will be open from 4 to 6. Now, that is kind of good. There was actually, when I was a kid, you know, I'm kind of envious of these kids you see, you know, these drivers, you know, five-year-old kid that's up on the pit box and that. When I was a kid, I'm like 12 years old. Yeah, I wasn't allowed in the pits, even if I was with my father.
Right.
As a, you know, an escort, you know, walking around. Because I was allowed in the pits as a minor until 10 o'clock or when they filled the tanks full of fuel. And then you were out. And then you couldn't leave or you couldn't come back until those tanks were emptied after the race. So the race would end, they'd empty the tanks, and then they'd let you in. So that was usually took about, I'm trying to remember, probably a half hour, 45 minutes. And then you could run in and chase around and do what you want to do. So this kind of makes sense because, to be honest, NASCAR garage, because of how confined it is, you talk about hot pits, the garages are hot too. I mean, these things are, you got cars coming in and out making adjustments off the track. They don't make the adjustments on pit road. A lot of times they come into the garage area and they're working on the cars, changing springs or whatever they need to do. And these guys are working. I mean, everybody is hustling. It's a time, you know. So I understand them maybe opening up, you know, early in the morning and later in the evening. That kind of makes sense. So they can kind of soak in the atmosphere of that and see. So I kudos to NASCAR for doing that, especially for the timing. Because, well, I'll tell you what, there is a danger element.
Yeah.
And we've seen that on TV, especially if you're watching Friday practice on television. You'll see these guys, you know, driving into the garages and that. And from the between the track and the garage, you'll see these, you know, a guy and a girl walking with their backs to traffic, wandering around, and there's some, you know, Tyler Dipple slamming on the brakes, you know, so they don't get hit.
That's why I'm 50-50 on this, because those cars do not enter or leave at reasonable speeds. They are cooking.
Yeah.
And you have to keep your head on a swivel. I've been in the pits a ton. I still keep my head on a swivel because you never know. And then last year we had the time where, who was it? It was after a race and Kyle Busch is walking and some fan comes up and gets into a heated argument with him and is talking crap. You know, it opens a big box can of worms. Yep. And I hope that obviously everything goes well, but this is not one of them slam dunk, this is going to work out fantastic type situations.
Well, I can tell you now there won't be cars coming in and out during this time. This will be during the cold pit area, whatever you want to call it. So, early enough in the morning, I mean, because at that time you're going to have the hardcore fans. And NASCAR always has, there's only a certain amount they'll let in. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pit marshals and whatnot in there if they're getting out of hand or they see somebody they don't think you're, come on, out.
So, yeah, I hope so.
The all-time greatest bad timing award goes to the woman at Texas, I believe it was, when Earnhardt Jr. won his first cup race, or was it at that time Busch race? Senior is up on the hauler, up on top of the trailer, comes down and is not running, but is at a fast walk going to victory lane. This kid just won his first NASCAR race in either the series or in the cup level. Here comes this woman. And this is all, they got the long lens camera, you know, from probably on top of the grandstand, whatever. And you see this woman making the beeline. And the guys on TV are like, oh, no, no, no. Sure enough, she's got a piece of paper in her hand. I'm like, you know, and even I think it might have been Jenkins and Benny Parsons maybe, or who knows who. But they're like, you know, there's a time and place for everything. That's not the time.
Nope.
You know, and that was the most, probably one of the most inappropriate times to ask. Junior or senior was cool. He kind of held up his hand and said, you know, I'm in a hurry here. Gotta go.
So, yeah.
But I just couldn't believe that. It's like, really? Are you oblivious to what's going on here? His kid just won his first race. Let him go. So Let's go take a break here. When we come back, we'll be talking to Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media, and we'll talk about new drivers and new places, and we'll also talk about the new disqualification rule in NASCAR. That and more coming up on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway.
Final Inspection. Final Inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
I like this song.
I like it too, yeah. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary, the great, Great Lakes Dragway.
Absolutely. Get your 2019 season passes now. Affordable and awesome.
And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is from Danville, Illinois, Dennis Michelson. Dennis, welcome to the show, sir.
Mr. Steve, it is great to be back for another season here on the Final Inspection.
And I would be remiss to not mention two of the greatest drivers to come from Danville. That would be Larry Boom Boom Cannon and his brother Steve.
Well, we've got another pretty good one now. Of course, he's from Oakwood, which is just down the block. But Bobby Pierce, who's one of the best short track racers, and we saw him at the Eldora truck race a few years ago, really making a scene. Bobby Pierce is from this area as well.
He is a good shoe, especially in the late model dirt series. So. Very good, Dennis. And so when you saw the number six kind of sliding down the backstretch at Daytona, did you go, oh, Stenhouse is in trouble?
No, I'm even worse than that. I'm going, my goodness,
Mark Martin,
you're off to a bad start to the season.
Yeah, well, that was because Viagra wasn't on the hood of the car still, you know? He could have kept it going straight if that was the case.
Whenever I see the six, I'm expecting to see the Valvoline colors. You know, I'm old school, but no, I'm having a little trouble. I guess there's like 17 different driver and crew chief changes this year. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Now you can't even find a good scorecard because Jayski's missing in action.
Yep.
I mean, it is getting bad around here for NASCAR fans, you know, but, I will say this one thing that I do want to pass along. I was so thankful because, you know, we're in the media, but we're fans. We're not kidding each other. We're not journalists. We're fans. And when I saw Mr. Bob Pockrass get signed by Fox Sports, I was like, thank goodness, because he's one that covers this this sport so great. And I hated to see, with ESPN doing all their cuts, that Mr. Pockrass is going to be with us for another season.
That is certainly good news. Speaking of drivers, I guess we should just go right down the line here. The big one, of course, is the 78 car is gone, Martin Truex, and this one we knew about last year, but, of course, moving to the 19 car of Joe Gibbs Racing. So what do you think that 19 car hits the ground running with Truex? I think they should, right?
I actually think that Martin Truex Jr. should be better this year. And the main reason is the last couple of seasons of this, you know, Toyota exchange of information between the 78 car and the Joe Gibbs Racing cars, it stopped being as fluid as it had been at the beginning of that relationship. So a lot of the key players from that 78 team, including his crew chief, Cole Pern, and also his car chief, came over, and one of his head engineers came over. And now they're going to be sharing data and making sure they're getting all the information that all the Toyota teams are getting. So I would expect, if anything, that he's going to have a better season this year.
Well, the reason it stopped being so fluid is because the 78 was whooping their behinds. And, you know, Joe Gibbs treated Furniture Row like a redheaded stepchild. And so I think you're right. I think hopefully he goes in, you know, and is looked upon as equal footing as the other teams and not the quote-unquote new guy, because, you know, Furniture Row was they were having their way with Gibbs there for a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing the amount of talent that Joe Gibbs Racing has over there. But when you kind of look at their driver lineup and you figure maybe a Denny Hamlin is the third best driver at his own team now, that's pretty incredible. And it's kind of going to be 1 and 1A between Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch, I think.
That's a good point. Moving forward, I forgot Bubby Jones from Danville, Illinois. Great USAC sprint car driver, still around.
Bubby.
Still in the Indianapolis area. I see him once in a while at lunch.
Nice.
Good guy, in or out and about. It's the 31. Ryan Newman, of course, we mentioned this before, moves to the number 6 car, vacated by actually Trevor Bayne, not actually Ricky Stenhouse.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting move. Ryan Newman got a lot out of that that 31 car the last couple of years. I don't think there's any question that Richard Childress Racing, except at the restrictor plate track, is not fielding equipment that was as good as the Toyota teams for sure, or some of the top Ford teams. So you put Ryan Newman in a situation where, you know, Trevor Bayne, I hated to see him go. He's a good kid and all that kind of stuff, but he just has been underproducing. But so has Roush Fenway Racing. It's been, you know, a long time since they've had a driver over there. Been like 4 or 5 years since Greg Biffle was over there and running in the chase, since they've had a real legitimate contender. I mean, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has been okay, but have we looked at him as a threat to win every week? I really expect some good things out of Ryan Newman, but I still don't think that Roush Fenway team will be nearly as strong as it could be. Otherwise, heck, Fenway, you know, they would have signed Craig Kimbrell for the Boston Red Sox, so they can't afford all that money. They're certainly not going to spend it on the racing team, you know, going forward here if they can't afford a relief pitcher for the Bo Sox.
And this is a kind of interesting situation. Late last year, you had Matt DiBenedetto in the 32 saying, I'm stepping away from the car. I want to be a free agent. I want to see what offers I can get. So he's in the 95. That was, of course, last year raced by Casey Kane. And, you know, some people maybe go, oh, yeah, okay, well, good move by him, 95. And I said this last year. I said, you know, that 95 car is better and is making increments. I thought they would make a bigger step last year with Casey Kane. Now you wonder with his health issues and whatnot, maybe he wasn't getting all, you know, they weren't getting the performance maybe they were getting. Who knows? But Matt, you know, he has a lot of respect in the garage. He's I think, a better driver than the general public may think he is, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. And if you look at that 95 car traditionally back a few years when Michael McDowell was running it, and then last year with Casey Kane, and now with Guido, they call him, because nobody can get DiBenedetto right. But when you look at that car, it's always been good at the restrictor plate track. I kind of expect them to be a sleeper for a top 10 finish here at the restrictor plate tracks again this year, because old Guido's got a pretty good rating at Daytona considering how bad the equipment he's been driving. Mm-hmm. This is a step up, but there is such a have and have nots. There's such a split between the top teams and then the other guys in NASCAR, except for the restrictor plate tracks. I don't think you're going to see him compete, although looking at the test that they did out in Vegas with this new rule package for the intermediate tracks, it looked a lot like a restrictor plate racing. So I'm kind of wondering if this season at the intermediate tracks, we're going to see some of the Levine family racing and some of the other second-tier teams do quite well.
And you have, of course, the 41 with Kyle Busch moving over to the number one, Kurt Busch, moving on over to the one, just peeling off that four.
Yeah, they had to move points around and everything else to make room in the end. But, yeah, it is crazy. I mean, we're going to watch the first couple of races here, and we're not going to be sure who's racing what. It's going to be really weird. Trying to get used to all these new guys and new numbers.
And then Corey LaJoie, I mean, going from you know, going from TriStar over to the 32, which Matt DiBenedetto was in. It'll be interesting to see how much bench sheet metal that car gets this year.
It's going to be a bunch.
And it's going to get some problems maybe with his facial features. Did you see the car that they're bringing to Daytona?
Oh, is
it?
Yes.
His face on it. And the cool thing is when they were getting ready to put it in the trailer and they were taking pictures of it, one of the crew guys used some white tape to give him like buck teeth. It was hilarious. but yeah, that team is another one of these teams that has been sort of outproducing their budgets in the past. I mean, I don't expect great things out of them, but with this new rule package that NASCAR has put in and taking more power away from the engines, maybe we're going to see some of these upstarts get lucky at a few of these races, just like they do at the restrictor plate. So this is going to be a crazy season, and then it's going to be amazing to see what happens in Victory Lane starting next week for the Daytona 500, because this new, hey, we're going to really DQ the winner and take a win away, that's something NASCAR hasn't done in decades.
Many years. In fact, let's
Before we get to that one, Dennis, the last one, number 19, Daniel Suarez, he goes to the 41 for Stuart Haas, replacing Kurt Busch. Do you expect Suarez to have a better season this year than he did last season?
No, I don't. Daniel Suarez is a very talented driver at the Xfinity level, but he has been a great example of how big of a jump it is from Xfinity to Cup. I don't expect anything more than what we saw out of him the last couple of years.
Fair enough.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll talk about disqualifications and more in the world of NASCAR when we return after this break. You're listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove.
Final Inspection. Final Inspection. Now, Dennis Michelson of D-Mike Media is here to give us the inside track on NASCAR and the world of short track racing.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Dennis Michelson. And Dennis, big change coming up in NASCAR for this year, and that is that NASCAR will disqualify winners for failing post-race inspection at the track. And before we jump into that, I want to kind of give a background on this. This goes back many, many, many years ago to Big Bill France Sr., who in the past had a policy of which when he said, when the fans go see the race on Sunday, I don't want them to read on Monday that instead of Junior Johnson, you know, they saw Junior Johnson win, and then on Monday they read it was actually Rex White or Lee Petty or whoever actually was the winner. He wanted the fans when they left the track to know that the guy they saw winning was actually the winner. And there's been a big change in that, hasn't there?
Yeah, and it's actually quite ironic that he would say that, because he milked the very first Daytona 500 race on the Speedway. He milked that photo finish for like 3 days or 4 days to make sure it was in the sports stories the whole time before he officially declared a winner. So I always thought that was kind of funny. And the very first strictly stock race back in 1949, the guy was disqualified for having non-stock springs in the car. So this was originally a NASCAR goal, changed, you know, towards the last few years, I guess, that Big Bill France Sr. was in charge. Bill France Jr. continued that trend, and it's been that way ever since, that we haven't heard about a DQ or even a penalty until Wednesday after the race, because lately they've been taking the cars back to R&D. Now, NASCAR is telling us that they will have a decision on whether a car was legal or not in 90 minutes after the race. And if the top team is disqualified, then they go to the second place car. If he fails inspection, they'll go to the third, and so on until they declare a winner. So 90 minutes or so after the race, we'll know whether the second place team is going to be the winner instead. And then, you know, my big concern is, will they find something that they're not sure of and have to still take something back to R&D? NASCAR always sets up these rules, but I don't think they think through the worst-case scenarios.
Right, and there's been a couple situations where, I want to say 1960, Richard Petty won his first race up at Toronto, and he was protested. And the person who protested his win was his father, Lee, and it was actually taken away from him. So you got Richard Petty marching past 50 wins, past 100 wins, up past 150 wins, and he's approaching 200 wins. And, you know, this scenario was brought up of how ironic it would be if he hit 199, and the reason why he doesn't hit 200 was because of Lee protesting his first win. Well, and then a situation occurred in the early 80s at Charlotte when he had a massive oversized engine and won the, I think it was then the National 500, if I recall what right, in 83. It wasn't with Petty Motorsports, though. I think it was when he was racing for Mike Curb. And that was his 198th win, I believe, or 199th, right around there. And they gave him the win because, well, it's Richard Petty, and we want him to hit 200. So I thought that was interesting. And it's funny how you mentioned that, you know, we'll go to the next guy and then the next guy. That actually occurred in qualifying at Daytona in 1976. It was, I want to say, Darrell Waltrip, A.J. Foyt, and Dave Marcus, maybe it was. And it was they got disqualified. So your front row of the 1976 Daytona 500 was two guys from Iowa, Ramos Stott and Terry Ryan. So I always thought that was kind of interesting. It should be interesting to see how this develops over the year, this coming year, Dennis.
Yeah, and they're also getting out ahead of this because as soon as they announced this, my first thought was, hey, everybody is going to stuff it into the wall while they're doing their post-race burnouts, and then they'll have an excuse if something's a little off kilter. Now NASCAR is saying that they might implement a new process that will not allow burnouts after the race. So everything that they're trying to think of, they're going to have to get out ahead of these crew chiefs. I think it's a good idea in practice. It's no different, though, than like the World of Outlaws. You go across the scales. If it's legal going across the scales, you get the win. If it's not, you get DQ'd. This is sort of the NASCAR version of this because there's a few more things that they have to check. But, again, I think they've been a little too stringent in post-race tech lately. Some of the things that they have caught, it's like, why didn't you catch these things in pre-race? And some of the other things were clearly because of damaged cars, like when Clint Bowyer years ago got nailed and it almost cost him a trip to the playoffs. So there's a lot of different things that have been done over the years where, you know, if it's because of damage, I'm not so sure that that car is supposed to be 100% legal because it's not in the pristine shape it was before the 500-mile race.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do about post-race burnouts, too. I mean, if you want to, you know, get away with something on your quarter panels, well, just burn, you know, burn them off when you do your burnouts, right?
Yeah, and famously, they, you know, remember there was the tape that they caught pre-race at Talladega one year where, you know, the crew chief for Jimmy Johnson told him, hey, if you win it, back it into the wall. You know, nobody was sure whether he was joking or not, but, you know, all it takes is a very little minute change that you can make to the car, and all of a sudden it doesn't pass post-race tech. It's going to be interesting to see how they implement this, and I am betting that very quickly into the season we'll see this 90-minute goal be blown away. It'll end up being about 3 hours.
Well, fans of the Milwaukee Mile may remember there was a situation in 1983 where this happened, and this is where, you know, sanctioning bodies can get themselves in trouble. Tom Sneva had won the Dana 150 kart race at Milwaukee, IndyCar race, and they went into victory lane, and everybody was standing up on the side pods and that, and so when they measured them, they were too low. And everybody's saying, well, we had, you know, like literally 10 people on the car after the race in victory lane. You know, this is ridiculous. And they had to go through. So they, you know, they had actually took the race from him and gave it to Al Unser, who was in second place. And then, you know, and then they had, you know, they had the little tribunal and everything, and they gave it back to Sneva. But, you know, it's nobody wants to read about, you know, who the race winner was, you know, 3 months later, like they did with Indianapolis in 1981. So, you know, NASCAR, I understand what they're trying to do here, but like you were saying, that you can also, it's a slippery road you can get into where if you're checking things so closely, you know, are you going to be disqualifying, you know, first, second, third, fourth, and are we going to see somebody like Matt DiBenedetto win a race here just because the first five cars were disqualified?
Yeah, it could get crazy. And when it comes to NASCAR crew chiefs, all of this is being implemented, of course, because the crew chiefs have been very creative in what they've been doing, and none of the penalties have worked so far. So, you know, this is NASCAR's next attempt to stop it.
All right, Dennis, thank you for joining us. And we'll actually, as the, you know, the Midwest season, the short track season gets going, we'll actually talk more about the short track racing. Right now it's primarily down south, you know, with the Snowball Derby. And, of course, we had the Chili Bowl a couple weeks ago. And we'll certainly chat when we have more time about what's going on in the world of short track racing, Dennis.
Yeah, and Milwaukee's got one of their very own that's going to be a hot name in the business, Sam Mayer, whose dad raced IndyCar back in the day. Sam Mayer is going to be one of the stories that we're covering all season long out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in a great driver development program. This kid is likely to be like the next Eric Jones.
All right. It'll be interesting to follow his story, and we'll certainly appreciate you coming on the show. We'll chat next week.
Sounds good, Z-Man.
All right, thank you. That's Dennis Michelson. Make sure to check out his stuff at D-Mike Media. And when we come back, we'll be talking with David Land from YouTube on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. It's been a fun show so far, talking NASCAR. This hour, we're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR 2, but also some IndyCar and F1. And joining us is David Land from YouTube.
Final Inspection. Let's check in with the host of the best motorsports channel on YouTube. Now, David Land on the Final Inspection Show.
And it's that time of year again. It's the first show. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is David Land.
Oh, my God. You guys made me an intro?
Oh, that was my surprise.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
That's amazing.
Do you ever come in studio? We'll roll out the red carpet, too.
Okay, well, I got to start planning my trip to Road America then, I guess.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, and if you do that, yeah, it's going to be it'll be a little more than just Road America, let me tell you. It'll be not only the whole prime rib, it'll be all the au jus and everything, the mashed potatoes,
the bratwurst,
the beer, the whole nine yards, yeah.
Oh, all right.
So it's how does somebody like David Land get ready for the new season?
Well, I mean, it never really stops. This is the thing that I've kind of realized now, kind of being more involved in the motorsports seen. It almost seems like it ramps up when there's no cars on track. You know, you got silly season, you've got everybody making their deals behind the scenes. You know, there's been a lot for me to talk about. So it's kind of like I've never been unwound. I've been wound up this entire winter, and now there's finally rubber hitting the road. So it's even more exciting now.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, we were saying, it's ARCA. For me, it's Daytona with the ARCA race that's on later this afternoon. But that's not entirely true because, you know, we have the Chili Bowl, which has gotten to be such a cool event with all the people involved and just the amount of drivers in one area from a lot of different, walks of life when it comes to auto racing. But then, the Rolex 24, too, which a couple weeks ago was, it was such a big story. Once again, what makes that a special race is you have all these different drivers from different series racing in it. But it is still tradition. Those are, I don't want to call them islands, but I love both of those events. But for me, when things really start kicking, okay, now we're going to go to, the racing is going to be weekly now. It's this weekend for me.
Well, yeah, that's always been the thing. The hardcore fans have always been super, super excited about the Chili Bowl and the Rolex. But once you start bringing all the kind of people who were kind of invested in other sports over the winter, you start bringing them back when Speed Week starts. There's no doubt about that one.
Yeah, certainly is. And a lot of what's the big story for you for Daytona coming up next week, of course, but also this weekend with the Clash?
Well, it's going to be nice because they just released the entry list, and obviously cars are, I think, practicing right now as we speak. 42 cars, so we're going to have some bumping. The 125s are going to be worthwhile to watch this year outside of just the general fact that they're usually a demolition derby. We're going to send a couple of guys home, so there's going to be that aspect to it, which was missing last year with only 40 cars. That's going to be very exciting. The race itself, as we know, is a crapshoot, so who knows exactly what's going to happen and how many cars are going to get torn up and who's actually going to end up in victory lane. I'm sure you guys are going to ask me at some point, but I have no clue.
And then there's a lot of stuff happening with IndyCar, too. And the one thing that was kind of surprised me with your latest episode on YouTube was the Pato Award news. Can I get us up to speed with that, please?
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be something that's kind of developed over the last few weeks. The Harding-Steinbrenner team, I think we talked about them, on one of the last episodes that came on last year, where you had the Steinbrenner family, who was, of course, associated with the New York Yankees and the ownership over there. Their kind of heir, George the Fourth, is a big IndyCar guy. He always has been. And he's friends with Colton Herta, their childhood friends. And he kind of helped Colton get up through the road to Indy. And their goal always was to get to IndyCar. And so their opening avenue to do that was to buy into the Harding Racing team, which was under some financial struggles last year. They had to kind of get rid of their primary driver, who was Gabby Chavez, and bring in some drivers who had some funding later in the year. And then when the Steinbrenners got involved, they were able to go out and not only hire Colton Herta, because that would have obviously been a part of the Steinbrenner thing. But they also made a deal with Andretti Autosport to get some technical support and also bring in the Indy Lights champion, Pato O'Ward. And, of course, for people who are in the know, Pato O'Ward is one of the fastest guys, period, out there. I mean, he's unbelievable to watch. He went down to Mexico, his home country, obviously, and dominated something called the Race of Champions, which is a race where they bring guys like Sebastian Vettel and Ryan Hunter-Reay and just like all the best drivers out there, and they all race them together. And Pato O'Ward was like one of the fastest guys consistently down there. But as it turns out, last couple of weeks, it seems like less and less likely that he is going to be a full-time driver. And that's unfortunate. It seems like the funding's just not going to be there for them to run two cars, and naturally, because of the association Colton Herta has with the team, they're going to go with Colton over Pato for the full season drive at that team.
David, all the news that we hear, in all the articles online and social media with NASCAR, everything is negative. Now, IndyCar is going the opposite way. The ratings are up. There's more interest and everything like that. Do you foresee that continuing, IndyCar continuing to grow this season and make gains on NASCAR's tails?
Yes. I don't think we should look at one negative story out of 20 positive ones and say, well, that's definitely a downward trend. I mean, NASCAR themselves have actually had some positive stories this week where they've actually gotten the fans fairly excited talking about disqualifying cars that are illegal, something we've talked about on this show before. But at the same time, you still have the 2019 package that everybody's very upset about, and the ratings are still going down, and the TV partners are cutting back on their involvement. That's kind of the opposite of what's going on in IndyCar racing. So, yes, this is a negative story, and I don't want to downplay the fact that the Indy Lights champion may not have a ride after they announced he would have a ride. But there were still 25 cars at Laguna Seca testing this weekend for IndyCar. That's a new track for what is now IndyCar, what used to be the Indy Racing League. And there's a lot of new cars, new stars, new tracks coming into IndyCar, the TV partner deal with NBC. A lot of positive momentum over there, and NASCAR generally doesn't have that right now. We'll have to see. I mean, the Daytona 500 ratings could level out, and that would probably be the best thing for them, but we've seen a serious downward trend with the Daytona 500 ratings. They dropped an entire point last year. So, we'll just have to see, but the trends don't seem to match up that it's going to change very much.
What's your opinion on the IndyCar Gold Pass?
I think so. They're doing a $50 introductory price to get practice qualifying and race replays. Considering that they were going to put it behind a paywall anyway, I think $50 is probably the right price. I think they said there was something going to be around the effect of 200 hours of fully produced programming. And looking at the other kind of NBC gold deals they have out there, it's reasonably priced. But at the same time, if you're an international viewer, and obviously I don't think there's going to be many listening to the show, but it's one of the things that has grown IndyCar over the last couple of years has been having the international audience who may be disillusioned with Formula One or whatever, and they've discovered IndyCar, and they've been able to watch it through YouTube. Obviously, I'm very familiar with that platform and the reach it has, and now a lot of those people are going to be blocked out from watching and being able to readily and easily pay attention to the series. And I think that is probably the biggest loss from the NBC Gold Pass, not so much the people who can, who can buy in the United States. Now, certainly there will be some loss from folks who just don't want to pay for content that was free last year, but I don't think it's going to affect as much as maybe some people are worrying about in the United States itself.
Very good. David, can you stick through to the next segment?
Sure thing. No problem.
Excellent. We'll talk more with David Land after this on the Final Inspection Show.
Final Inspection.
Inspection.
Let's check in with the host of the best motorsports channel on YouTube. Now, David Land on the Final Inspection Show.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. Joining us, of course, on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline and is David Land. And switching gears to Formula One, this one, I guess it kind of surprised me because I thought it was going to happen last year, then they didn't do it, and then you kind of forget about it, and you're wondering, okay, now they did it. Now, I shouldn't be surprised. But we have a new Formula One team in F1, but it's only by name only. Alfa Romeo takes over for Sauber. Are you kind of sad losing the Sauber name in F1?
Not really. I mean, it's really only been Sauber and name only for years now. I mean, Peter Sauber, the guy who started the team, really hasn't had a whole lot of involvement. It's kind of been other folks running the team. And certainly Fiat, the company that owns both Ferrari and Alfa Romeo, buying into the team last year was definitely an indicator that they kind of wanted to turn it into the kind of secondary Ferrari team kind of like we see with Red Bull, with Toro Rosso, and then the Red Bull factory team itself. That's been a formula that's worked very well for Red Bull, obviously, being able to move drivers up and develop them in what is a very difficult environment to develop new drivers, which is Formula One. You know, you throw a young guy in there at 17, 18, 19 years old, and if they flounder in the first couple of years and they're driving for Red Bull, they'll be in trouble. So having that avenue for Ferrari, essentially, to do that, and also bring a name like Alfa Romeo back into Formula One, which really hasn't been there since the 80s, it's pretty cool.
And new colors for the Haas F1 team.
Yeah, very reminiscent of the Mario Andretti Lotuses from 1978, the world champion car over there, the John Player special livery, but this is a rich energy livery. It's black and gold. It's like some energy drink company, and as we know, energy drink companies are fairly fickle unless they're named Red Bull, so we don't know how long it'll be around or whether or not the check's going to bounce, but at the moment, the car is black and gold. And it's kind of, there's some mixed feelings on it. I'm not necessarily convinced that the black and gold livery translates to a modern F1 car. I don't know if it necessarily looks good, or you can't really read the sponsors on it. But I suppose if they're paying for it, you know, and they want it to be unreadable, whatever.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. The cars are, well, I guess that's what happens when you have a car designed by a computer and not by somebody who says, "Wow, this looks really nice and fast." You know what I mean? It's they've gotten, you know, I want to see the cars on the track before I make a judgment on the wings. I heard what you said about the wings being, you know, the new large wings in the back. So, you know, but I the multiple element front wings and all that, I don't know, you know, and with the real skinny front, they kind of look bizarre, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Well, you'll be happy if this year they've reduced the amount of elements on the wings significantly this year. By rule, I think they can only have something like 10 elements versus like the 30 they had.
Right,
last year.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So they look a little more clean, but it's certainly not. Let's just put it this way: they're not the 91 Lotus or the 91 Jordan in terms of looks. They're not very clean and they're not very swoopy. They definitely look like Lego cars more than they do, you know,
right, you know,
really sexy race cars.
And I liked, you know, when they, with IndyCar a couple of years ago, when they kind of cleaned up the front of the cars, well, it's not only an aesthetic issue, it's also a bit of a safety issue because these, you know, they would touch a wheel. Next thing you know, it's a festival of carbon fiber all over, you know, one corner of the track. And they were, you know, you had all the carbon fiber flying through the air and whatnot. You know, if they went to even like the old biplane wing or something that they used to have, like you mentioned the Lotus 91 or that, I mean, yeah, things were a lot cleaner, but by the nature of the design, you know, they're also, you know, they didn't tend to break apart as easy, did they?
Well, yeah, and to another point, they're also cleaner aerodynamically. One of the reasons they've kind of gone to these bigger wings and these less complicated wings, and frankly, they should go further in that direction, in my opinion. But they raced better when they, you know, in the 90s and the
sure.
80s, and when there were less, in the 70s, certainly, when there was less aerodynamic dependency on the car, less dirty air coming off the back of it, and less downforce on the front to take away in the first place. So, you know, you could race a little bit better.
Right. You know, and, you know, it kind of, it's funny, you know, for many years, the old ALMS and now IMSA series, you know, I thought about 10 years ago or that when they had the spider cars, the spider prototypes, those were the ultimate looking car of the modern car. And now they've, you know, added the coupes. I understand why they made that move and everything. But it's funny, my wife we're watching the Rolex 24, and she's like, "What is up with those, with the rear of the cars with the big fin?" And I understand why they do it. It's for advertising and whatnot. But most of their cars didn't have any type of sponsorship on there. You know, if they could just kind of have that fin off the back of the engine cowl, follow the cowl itself, maybe put a little movement in there, but having that big, huge blade, aesthetically, it looks ugly, in my opinion.
Oh, it's awful. And, you know, they added those probably, God, it's almost been 10 years already. But they added those probably around, whatever, 2011. And the idea was that there was a lot of, you know, in the era that we just talked about with the Porsche RS Spyder and the Audi R10, which were, by, I completely agree with you, probably the best looking prototypes ever, in my opinion. When those cars would get sideways, a lot of times they would do blowovers. So they added those fins down the side of them, hopefully prevent, or at least add a lot of drag to prevent that. Now, since then, we've seen a lot of cars take off with sideward spins and contact. So are they very effective? No, probably not. But unfortunately, the powers that be are convinced that they're a safety device. So until the powers that be change their minds, I don't think we're going to get rid of them anytime soon.
And, of course, I watched your channel, and great channel for those fans. Make sure you subscribe to David Land on YouTube. But I got a little bit of a complaint, minor complaint. You know, now that's done in your office, correct?
Yes.
Okay. My only request is to rotate the cars behind you. That's my only. I understand the Buddy Lazier deal. I know that. But just, I'd like to see, you know, because you got a lot of stuff going on back there. But maybe rotate the stock a little bit. I'd like to see some of your other cars that you have in your collection.
Okay. Well, I can do that. Yeah, that's one of those things where, unfortunately, a lot of times the cars that are on the shelf are the ones that don't have boxes. Mm-hmm. The ones that are rare and, you know, you go, oh, you know, I got to buy this even though it doesn't have a box. But, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. I'll rotate things every now and then. I'll try to keep it fresh. I do have some interesting things that I could put back there that may spark some discussion.
Now, I do have a question. You have one that would be on your left as you're facing the camera. It's a Newman Haas car. Is that a Cristiano D'Amato car?
Well, I've got two of them on the shelves. I sit in front of one of them. They're both from 1999. They're the Swift.
Oh, okay.
So I've got a Christian Fittipaldi.
Okay.
And then the one you probably have seen is the Michael Andretti.
That is my
from 99.
Yeah. I was thinking it was a little bit later. So, okay, very good.
They never made a D'Amato. I'm so disappointed because that car in particular, the Lola that he won the championship with, is so beautiful, but they never made it. So it's just not possible to buy.
You know, I know a guy who does that. Well, I should say know him. Yeah. Yeah. He's actually, there's a guy in Indy that actually converts. He'll convert a diecast to whatever car you want. I'm sure it's quite pricey. Ooh. I'm not sure exactly, but I've seen some of his work. He's done some of the the Indy cars, like the Roadsters or some of the Eagles, and he's done some custom cars. It's pretty nice. So, but what's coming up? What will we see on the David Land channel coming up?
Well, obviously, this month is pretty NASCAR heavy, especially this coming week. Going to get the what I describe as a bandwagoner's guide to the Daytona 500. And what that is kind of the classic thing that the TV networks for some reason neglect to do these days, which is just go through the field, show you what the car looks like, tell you a little bit about each of the 42 competitors. And you can learn about the drivers and find out who's actually in the freaking race, which seems to be something that's very difficult for the people who cover NASCAR, despite the fact that they, you know, have 20 hours of coverage. They don't ever get around to talking about the guys in the back of the field and even some of the guys in the front. So that's what I do for that. And, that's usually a very popular video. A lot of people like that stuff. And then we'll just be, you know, talking Daytona for this week. And if anything breaks in the world of IndyCar or F1, we'll be talking about that as well.
Excellent. Well, David, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
All right. That was David Land from make sure to check out his YouTube channel, David Land. That's LAND. And when we come back, we'll be talking more racing on the Final Inspection Show. Back to the Final Inspection Show. I'm your host, Steve Zotke, along with Jeff Orlowski. How are we doing, Jeff?
Oh, fantastic, Steve. It's good to be back.
Sun's out.
Yep, sun's out. Cars are out. Oh, it's good. It's cold, but Daytona means spring is on the way.
Order up some chicken wings and watch the ARCA race.
I just got an air fryer. I haven't tried it yet.
Really?
Yeah, for Christmas. So I think I might try some wings
an
in there.
Air fryer.
It's supposedly a healthier way to deep fry food.
So you do it by air.
You know, you could throw a little bit of oil in there, but it's not where you're completely submerging everything in boiling oil.
So it's in like a kettle type thing, or?
I haven't even opened a box yet.
The big thing around here last year, or maybe in the year before, the pressure cooker.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
Everybody had one of those except for me.
I used it about 4 times, and that thing is collecting dust.
Oh, is it? Is it gone the way of the bread makers?
Pretty much, you know, it was cool, and it made things really fast. The meals that I tried on it were good. I just don't think about it. You know what I mean? I just...
Well, I brought it up to my wife, Susan, and she was like, no pressure cooker. I'm like, all right. It's like, yeah, I don't know. So somewhere along her life, a pressure cooker must have wronged her somewhere along the line.
My wife is kind of the same way. She's always worried it's going to blow up. Like I said, I made macaroni and cheese in there one time in the pressure cooker, the Instapot or whatever it's called, and it took about 6 minutes from raw pasta to done.
That's
so
amazing.
It was awesome. It was awesome. My kids, you know, like, yeah, I've just started dinner, and they all start whining. Oh, I'm starving. Yeah, it's done now.
I can't tell you how many times I've come home from work. So what are we doing? Did you thaw any meat? No, everything's frozen. It's like, okay, well, that would be nice to have a pressure cooker. Then we could throw in something, and
yeah,
it's done in an hour. You know?
It is nice because, you know, like you said, you could throw frozen stuff in there, and it defrosts it and cooks it at the same time. It's convenient. I never got into the habit of using it enough, and so now it just kind of collects dust.
And the microphone smells again.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I hate when that happens.
What is your mic? That's Sparky's seat.
Yeah, I know.
Smell like Mickey Mouse?
I don't know what it smells like.
Bowling alley?
It's, I don't know.
You can't blame it on Rami and the hummus anymore.
We got rookies this year in NASCAR.
We do.
In the Cup Series.
Yeah, we got 3.5, I guess.
I think your favorite's going to be the number 8, Daniel Hemric. We also have Ryan Preece in the 47. Matt Tift in the 36. He's a good story. And then they also have 97, Tanner Berryhill. But they announced a big sponsor, big, hey, we're going to go with Daytona, hey, this and that. And then Daytona comes and
yeah, like 2 days after they announced they pull out.
Boyko Racing, who fans in the area may remember that Josh Balicki did some races with them. And the good news with Josh Balicki is he is running in the Xfinity Series and once again waiting to the last moment. And he's racing with RSS Racing, the number 38 car in the Xfinity Series. So good to see. You know, it's so tough for these young drivers nowadays. And for what Josh has been able to do is really quite extraordinary. A kid from Wisconsin, and to be able to be a viable driver and to be racing in you know what he's been able to do last couple of years, you know, from a road racing background, switching over to NASCAR, which is very tough, and to, you know, be getting seat time, it's tough. It really is.
Yeah, it is fantastic, and congratulations to him. The bad part, like you said, is that it wasn't announced right away, so he's kind of playing catch-up now when, you know, he didn't have a full off-season with the team to get the communication down and all that kind of stuff. So it would be nice for him to have a full season with an actual true shot. You know what I mean?
Right.
The true spring training and practice and getting used to your spotter and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he is coming, starting out a little bit behind the eight ball. But, you know, if anybody can do it, you know, Josh Balicki, he sat there, and this isn't the first time that the odds have been stacked against him. And every time they are, he keeps coming out on top. So I don't expect this to be any different. I think he's going to hit the ground running. Obviously, he's 110% focused and eye on the ball and raring to go. I expect good things for him this year.
And kudos to Dave Coleman of the Journal Sentinel once again, getting still on that motorsports beat. And, you know, it's tough for the print media out there and that. But I love his stuff, his online stuff and that. And, you know, tip of the hat to Dave once again. Always good to read his stuff in the Journal Sentinel. And we hope to have him on the show again sometime during this year.
Yeah, and see him out at some races like we did last year, too. So
certainly.
Yeah, yep. Keep it up. Keep up the good work, Dave. Much appreciated.
So going into this year, not just NASCAR, but overall, what are you looking to do? I know one thing I try and do every year is go to a different track.
Okay.
So new track. Like last year for me, it was Gateway. The year before that was, I forget, but we got dead air now. But, you know, in the past, like Sebring have added. Gateway, there's a few others. The one dirt track up north we went to. You weren't there, but I went up there with met the Bill Balog crew that they shut down.
I'm
having a brain fart.
Well, they shut
Manitowoc.
Okay.
Yeah, the Manitowoc racetrack.
Well, that
never
got
had gotten
into...
a chance. Yeah, now it's a Kroger or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it just, you know, I always do, I think as a fan, that's something that's always fun to do. Go to a new track, try and somewhere, whether it's a local track, a national track, always do that.
Yeah. You know, mine is to get to more of these short track races. I went to a bunch last season, up in Sheboygan. I always go to the Hill in Sturgeon Bay. That's right by my house up there. So I try to plan, you know, when my wife gets the itch to go up there, I look when the track is running and try to make sure that we're there at the same time. So, you know, definitely a lot more of the short tracks. One of my goals this season is to give road racing more of a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm an oval guy, and so I want to try to see if I can like it more, but that's going to be tough. So, you know, especially live, because when I'm live, I want to see the whole track. You know, I want to be, and because I don't just sit there, and when I go to a race, I don't watch the leaders 95% of the time. I'm watching middle of the pack. I'm watching the end of the pack, you know, guys and stuff like that. And I don't want to just go to a race and see guys go through three turns and then have to wait a minute and a half for them to come back around. And then they're driving so damn fast, I don't know who the hell it was. So, you know, I'm going to go into this season with more of an open mind when it comes to the road racing. I, you know, like I said, do I think I'm going to be 100% sold? Maybe not, but I'm going to try.
I'm hoping to get out to Monterey this year.
See, I don't.
I haven't been there in over 10 years.
We're in a different tax bracket because I can't do those trips.
That's a track where you can almost see the whole race. If you go up kind of behind the grandstand, there's a hill there. You can almost see the whole track.
Nice. Yeah, I would enjoy that then. But, you know, I don't have the disposable income you've got.
Oh, please.
You know,
I had your money, I'd throw mine away.
I got three kids and tons of bills. So I don't have Zaki money. I've got crumbs.
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 All right. On that, I'm going to count my money during this commercial break, and then when we return, we'll be talking more. And we're actually going to – there's an announcement. I guess you could call us – maybe we'll call this the ARCA show. There's an announcement made about the future of the ARCA series, which was purchased by NASCAR last year. So we're going to play a little bit of that coming up next, and we'll have more some more gossip and news on the Final Inspection News brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Back to the Final Inspection Show. Fun show so far. I'd like to thank Dennis Michelson from D-Mike Media for coming on, and also David Land for also coming on in the second hour. And pretty cool announcement. There's been always some, you know, you always get worried about when sanction or when groups or that get purchased by other groups and whatnot. You're always worried about what's going on with their future. Kind of a cool announcement from earlier today or yesterday, was it, Jeff?
Yeah. You had Mike Helton, obviously, from NASCAR, John Menard, talking about some sponsorship with ARCA. So here is that press conference from that took place yesterday down at Daytona.
Everyone's attention. We'll continue our media availabilities here at Daytona International Speedway with a very special announcement. The ARCA Racing Series and Menards have signed an extension on their 10-year partnership, and this announcement builds upon Menards' current deal as the presenting sponsor, elevating them to that brand to an entitlement position. So effective immediately, the series will now be the ARCA Menards Series. Joining us this afternoon to talk about this are Mr. John Menard Jr., founder of Menards, Ron Draeger, the president of ARCA, and Mike Helton, vice chairman of NASCAR. I'll start with you, Ron. ARCA and Menards have had a 10-year partnership. How can we expect that partnership to evolve now that they are in the entitlement position?
Well, thanks, Tom. The biggest difference, you know, for 10 years, we've established a great relationship with John and all the Menards folks. Over that period of time, we've been working on one-year agreements. This will be a multi-year agreement, and I think it just provides us an opportunity to do more strategic planning, looking ahead a little further, and maybe expanding the way that the relationship has grown and open up some new opportunities.
John, how does assuming an entitlement position now benefit your company and build upon the relationship you have with ARCA?
Well, we've been with ARCA a long time, and we're a Midwest-based company, and ARCA has strong ties to the Midwest, so our customers in the Midwest shop our stores, attend ARCA races, and we really like the idea that we can have a longer-term relationship, that we can have more things that'll carry on from year to year that we can build on. I think it's just going to be a really a lot better business relationship and allow us to do more for our customers and ARCA fans.
And Mike, what does having a brand like Menards expand their involvement in the sport mean overall for stock car racing?
Well, it means a lot. First of all, John's no stranger to motorsports. He's been in it for a long time. So for Menards to step up with the ARCA relationship, I think, is indicative and complementary to the decision that Jim France and Lisa Kennedy had to bring ARCA officially into the NASCAR family. And if, as we move around and we get the opportunity to go to Midwestern racetracks and you see a Menards store and you're familiar with the name, but when you go experience his retail experience, you know that relationship is going to be really good for the motorsports industry, and we'll do everything we need to do to deliver from our side. But I'm excited about it because I think the Menards name is tremendously respected in the motorsports industry, but their customers are our customers. They're hardworking, do-it-yourself individuals that I think we complement each other very well.
All righty. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll open it up for questions for a few minutes. We'll start over here on the far right with Claire B. Lang.
I have a question for John Menard, and it is really, you have been committed to NASCAR for quite a long time, and this launch into even a bigger commitment, what have you found that the payback has been for Menards to be associated with NASCAR that caused you to step up now?
Well, I think it's a big opportunity for us to get our brand in front of people that we believe are our core customer. Our core customer, our demographic, tends to be a little bit older. It tends to be guys that do things, that work with their hands, that are do-it-yourselfers by nature. And this will allow us to connect on a lot better basis with them. And I think the multi-year opportunity is really good for us because we can make some plans to help with ticket sales, to help with promotions, to help with hospitality that we couldn't do otherwise on a year-to-year basis. So the year-to-year relationship, we're no strangers at this table at all, but the year-to-year relationship has been very good. We're really looking forward to a little more of NASCAR's expertise being more resources available to our cup and more resources available to us and in turn. I think it's going to really work out well.
We'll go right here in the middle to Zach Albert.
Zach Albert, NASCAR.com for Mike or Ron. The ARCA and NASCAR deal came together. It's been a little, almost a year now. What has the relationship been like thus far? And how wide open is it for you guys to develop and to grow in the future?
I think I'll just defer back to John's reference that there's no strangers at the table. We're a 67-year-old company. For 66 years, we were a family-owned company, and we had a relationship with NASCAR that was tremendously beneficial to us. And in many cases, ARCA benefited so greatly from that relationship that it just sort of made sense. Our families were friends before there was ever a NASCAR or an ARCA. So to be able to become an official part of the platform, to officially be a NASCAR property, everything that has happened since that point in time has been a positive. And I would venture to say, as hard as Mark Gundrum and Bob Duval have worked with the Menards folks, we would not be sitting at this table making this announcement had we not been a NASCAR property.
And the other big key message that unfolded last May in Talladega was that Jim France, Lisa Kennedy, the France family are serious about racing opportunities in all forms of motorsports, at all levels of motorsports. So the ARCA folding into NASCAR family gives NASCAR and ARCA both the opportunity to join forces and provide opportunities at multiple levels that are reasonable to participate in whatever level of racing you want to participate in, and that's a big piece of that puzzle. John Menard just put another big piece of that puzzle together for us to help to make the whole picture clear.
We'll stay in the middle right here and go to Chris Knight.
Chris Knight, CatchFence.com. Mike, just following up a little bit, what you just talked about with ARCA now falling under the NASCAR platform, you also have a Midwest presence for not only ARCA, but also for Menards. Can you talk about how much of that will do for the grassroots teams and obviously the fans that want to have that Midwest presence?
Well, to start with, I use the term that NASCAR is now under the ARCA umbrella when it comes to the Midwestern racing platform and style. And Ron's done a tremendous job of building a very specific group of stock car opportunities. And Menards is critical to that. And now with the combination of the announcements we've made, I think our story just unfolds better and better as we go along. And that consolidation of all of us, I think, just gives the motorsports industry and those that want to participate in it, drivers, crew members, team owners, fans, racetracks, it gives that group an opportunity to participate in stock car racing, and I think that's a great spoke to the future.
We'll go right up front here to Lee Spencer.
Lee Spencer, RacingBoys.com. Speaking about the future, we're going to be going to a new car in a couple of years. How can we make it cost efficient for ARCA teams to make use of what cars that we have now and kind of, you know, pass them on to cut down cost in the process?
Well, I think as all of this blends together, Steve O'Donnell and his group and Ron and his group and everybody else at NASCAR levels have the opportunity to consolidate those efforts and make decisions that are healthy for every level of motorsports from today on. And I think that's one of the big opportunities that we're sitting here talking about.
We'll go back to Claire for one final question.
I have another question for John Menard. Can you talk about how you initially got into NASCAR? What kick-started you and Menards to get into NASCAR that led to this growth? You know, take us back to the beginning.
Wow, that's a long time ago already. It was Brian Reffner and the Truck Series, as I recall. And you being from Wisconsin probably know the Reffners. Yep. And we were running Indy cars, and kind of knew that the there was a big shift among at least our customers that were interested in NASCAR, thought NASCAR was a very cool organization, which it is. And anyway, got together with Brian and took the parts of the team from Richard Childress and put it all together. Anyway, we went truck racing. And we're fortunate enough to win a race down in Texas. So we thought, wow, we're pretty smart guys, you know. I mean, coming over from IndyCar, won a truck race. Well, then we spent the whole night, I think, taking the engine apart down there and finally passed, thank God. And thought, well, this might be a little harder, we thought. And of course, we kind of went from there. And but actually, Brian got us into it way back when. I mean, that was and Richard Childress. So it's been a long time ago.
All right, Menards gonna sponsor the ARCA series. That making more of an investment in NASCAR. That's fantastic.
That's good because you know, I've always been a fan of the ARCA series. In a way, it's kind of a throwback series. And they've been working, they've been trying things, you know, with the crate motors and whatnot, trying to make it easier for guys to get in. It's still tough, it's still pricey, but, and there's kind of the unfortunate thing right now, you won't see it too much this weekend, but as they go through the series, there's kind of a haves and have-nots. There's a kind of either you're going to race for the win or you ain't, and, but you know, there's ebbs and flows in racing series, and it's a good series. They need it. There's always been some criticism on that, on you know, well, should they be running at Daytona until they get well? The guys gotta get their experience. They gotta it's just part of the deal. So, looking forward to the race this afternoon, and looking forward to doing the show this year.
Absolutely.
So we look forward next week. We'll be talking with Eddie Lapine. We're going to be doing a thing. We kind of started it last year. We want to kind of move, do a little more of a thing with kind of the pick of the week with the NASCAR, not only the NASCAR series, but as we move forward and kind of other series. And we might be doing some contests or something. We don't know yet. We got to kind of feel how things go. So looking forward to that. And, of course, David Hobbs will be joining us too. Formula One expert, so looking chatting once again with David Hobbs this year on the Final Inspection Show.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Hobbs, Land, Lapine, pretty much, you know, most weeks it's going to be great.
Don't forget Dennis. So thank you for listening to the Final Inspection Show. Don't forget to like us on and follow us on radio.com too and on Twitter, and we'll talk to you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.